It's Wednesday, March 6th. I'm Juanita Tolliver.
And I'm Priyanka Arabindi, and this is What a Day, where we are seeking investments and cash loans from anybody who got rich off of Bitcoin once again.
Yeah, let's be real. We know it's just going to go back down, folks, but give your money to us while Bitcoin is high.
Yeah, we take back everything we said about you for several years. Let's just pretend it didn't happen.
For a fee,
we will take it back. Thank you, Juanita.
On today's show, there is still an impasse in ceasefire negotiations between Israel and Hamas. Plus, an appeals court struck down Florida's Stop Woke Act.
But first, the smoke has mostly cleared on Super Tuesday, where 16 states and American Samoa went to the polls yesterday. And it should come as no surprise, but on the Republican side, Donald Trump won almost every single contest.
This was an amazing night, an amazing day. It's been an incredible period of time and our country's history. It's been sad in so many ways, but I think it's going to be inspiring because we're going to do something that, frankly, nobody's been able to do for a long time.
We're recording this at 10:30 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday night, so there are still a lot of mail-in and absentee ballots out there. The tallies are not final yet, but this is what we know as of now.
Trump's primary challenger, Nikki Haley, hasn't dropped out yet. On Super Tuesday, she eked out a win in Vermont. That's in addition to her win in D.C. earlier this week. However, her path to becoming the Republican nominee is next to non-existent. Trump has taken every other state so far, and he's getting closer to the 1,215 delegates that he needs to clinch his party's nomination.
Right. And on the other side of this, we were also watching how Democrats fared. There is a lot that we can tell based on how some of those primary contests went, what the turnout looked like, and more. And that information can give us a clue about how strong or weak the party will be heading into November. So to dig into all of this, we spoke with an expert, Danielle Dysaroff. She is the executive director of the progressive think tank Data for Progress. Danielle, welcome to What a Day.
Thanks so much for having me on one of the biggest holidays for political nerds. So thank you.
Before we dive into specific states and contests, can you just give us your overall impression of how Super Tuesday went and, you know, what position Democrats are in after last night?
I don't think that President Biden and Democrats can really read too much into these results, just because this is an uncompetitive Democratic primary. Primary turnout and margins are not necessarily indicative of general election results, but I do think that there are some good nuggets in there for President Biden and Democrats to be optimistic about. I mean, Nikki Haley winning in Vermont, despite it being a open primary, so that's a little bit different than a closed primary where only Republicans are voting. I think that was pretty surprising to me. I was a little bearish on Nikki Haley's chances, but digging into some of the exit polling data. Again, exit polls, you kind of have to take with a grain of salt, but I think that there could be some good signs in there for President Biden looking at Haley voters who might become Biden voters come fall.
Yeah, that was definitely something that jumped out at me too. The energy in which Haley voters were like, I will absolutely never support that man, Donald Trump, in the general ever, right? Like, it's clear, right?
Yeah, and something that has surprised me is still just the percentage of voters who still don't think that the election is going to be between Biden and Trump. We've been monitoring this for a while now.
I'm making a face for our listeners. I'm confused how that realization has not sunk in for the population.
Yeah, I mean, we just got new polling back just a few days ago, and we found that 70% of voters think that the 2024 election will be between Biden and Trump. That's a high watermark of what we've observed over the past few months. But still, more than one in five voters say it is too soon to tell, including nearly 3 in 10 independent voters. So we'll see how those numbers shift after Super Tuesday, and it becomes abundantly clear that despite her victories in D.C. and Vermont, that Nikki Haley is not going to be the nominee. So as more voters start coming to this realization that, okay, yes, this is going to be between Biden and Trump again, how are they going to choose between those two candidates when they're the only two options left? And I think that's where President Biden and Democrats are hopeful that, especially like some of those Haley voters, those never Trumpers, are going to come home just like they did in 2020.
Let's zoom into the Tar Heel state, North Carolina. I classify it as a pinkish purple state, given the amount of Republican control in the state legislature. And I think it's a really good bellwether to gauge how well Democrats and Republicans will perform in the fall. The gubernatorial matchup will be between Trump-backed Republican Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, who I feel like I need to let people know, he's an anti-abortion conspiracy theorist who said that God formed him to fight LGBTQ acceptance, and he called Beyonce satanic.
Just a cherry on top, really.
Just some context and color for him. On the Democratic side, though, State Attorney General Josh Stein won the party's nomination. So how might this matchup affect Biden's chances in November when North Carolina will be a key state in the presidential election?
You know, I'm getting deja vu thinking back to Pennsylvania in 2022. That's where I'm from. And Doug Mastriano was a very extreme, hardline conservative candidate. And I had folks in my life who are typically not very engaged on political issues, even talking to me saying, oh my God, this guy's crazy. We can't have him in office. So I could really see the potential for there to be a surge of very strong anti-MAGA energy coming to help defeat, you know, the Republican candidate in North Carolina. I, again, just want to be like, very cautious because anything could happen and we're still far ways from November. But in 2022, Republicans nominated some very interesting candidates like Doug Mastriano that voters widely rejected. And I think that if they continue to make the same mistake, I mean, they're a little bit more disciplined, I would say, in terms of candidate recruitment for the 2024 cycle than they were in 2022. But what could be seen as an easy pickup for Republicans becomes a lot more challenging when the person that they're nominating is so out of step with where voters are at in terms of social values.
Totally. Switching gears a little bit to some of the issues that candidates have been talking about, voters are animated by. We've known that abortion continues to be a winning issue for Democrats since the fall of Roe. Abortion protections have won every ballot that they've been on. Given the context of the latest attacks on reproductive rights by Republicans, did we see that kind of same energy driving voters around the country here?
I just like keep coming back to this fact that only 70% of people actually think it's going to be between Biden and Trump. And that sort of is a trickle-down effect in terms of what voters actually think Trump will do if he becomes president. And we did some polling on this too, and we found that less than half of voters think that Trump would actually pass a national abortion ban. Only 24% of voters we found blame Trump for abortion bans. Primarily, they blame the Supreme Court. But even when we tell them they can choose as many options as they want, fewer voters choose Trump. So that's a huge issue.
Fascinating. He's literally beating his chest as much as he can, saying, I overturned Roe by myself.
Exactly. And we've seen President Biden and Democrats really start aggressively hammering Trump. And, you know, with this most recent IVF decision in Alabama, which very smartly President Biden, Democrats have really pounced on this. And we found in our polling that over 80% of voters think it is important to protect access to IVF and to birth control. So the Dobbs effect is not waning. People are still incredibly angry and motivated to vote because of reproductive rights. And this latest issue with IVF and seeing Senate Republicans reject a bill to protect access to IVF is just like the easiest thing for Democrats to make a campaign ad on going into the fall and remind voters, hey, we are the party who wants to protect reproductive access, and this is what Republicans want to do if they take office.
I appreciate you mentioning Alabama because that's a state where I've been watching some down ballot races, especially with their new congressional maps, and you have some Republican incumbents facing each other. So looking at returns elsewhere, where did you see other interesting outcomes? And another state I'm thinking of is California with their Senate primary that could yield some interesting results.
Yeah. You know, I was also interested in looking at Virginia. Trump is going to cruise to a victory in Virginia. So the California race in particular is a tough pill to swallow just in terms of the money being spent in the race when there are so many other Democrats that are facing really tough elections in swing states. So there's definitely, I think, a lot of heartburn among Democrats thinking about how much money is being spent to defend a really, really tough Senate map in this election cycle. So I think that's something that really has stuck out to me.
And walking away from yesterday, what do you think that Biden and Democrats need to focus on? Were there any other weaknesses that you identified?
State of the Union is a big opportunity. This is like a Super Bowl of, you know, political events this week. So If I were on the Biden campaign, I would look at Super Tuesday results and my priors probably wouldn't change that much. Already thinking about Never Trumpers and swingier voters that were part of the 2020 coalition that we need to keep together in the election in the fall, and just State of the Union and having that opportunity to have so many eyeballs tuned into the television. You know, what we're seeing in terms of folks' awareness of the Biden agenda versus their support for President Biden's policies is a huge difference. Like 80, 90% of people support so many of the president's accomplishments and, you know, policy priorities like protecting Social Security, lowering prescription drug prices. But like 1 in 5 voters have heard the president talk a lot about those issues. So with more eyes and focus on the policy agenda, this is an opportunity for President Biden to really hone in and remind folks this is what's at stake and this is it.
Right.
This is what we're working with.
Danielle Dysaroth, Executive Director of the progressive think tank Data for Progress, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Super Tuesday might be done, but November is just around the corner. Find out how you can get involved by heading to votesaveamerica.com. That's the latest for now. We'll be back after some ads.
What a Day is brought to you by Fast Growing Trees. Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S., with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers. They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Plus, Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever.
We love Fast Growing Trees here. I keep telling you that the mini plants that I've gotten from these folks are yet hanging on. And that's not because I have a green thumb, okay? This spring, Fast Growing Trees, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code WAD at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code WAD at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code WAD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply.
What a Day is brought to you by Ulta Beauty. This AAPI Heritage Month, Ulta Beauty is celebrating the joy of belonging, belonging to a community composed of intricate connections, belonging to our past and our future, to the heritage and birthright that is beauty.
Ulta Beauty shines a light on the AAPI community, passing the mic to brand founders and creators to tell their stories centered on heritage, joy, and beauty. They carry AAPI-owned and founded brands like Live Tinted, Peach & Lily, Glamnetic, Tree Hut, and more. Shop AAPI-owned and founded brands at Ulta Beauty stores and Ulta.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to work through whatever's weighing you down. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Therapy is great for, you know that thing that just is like sitting on your shoulder, you can't get over it, and you just sometimes need somebody to talk through it with? Therapy can be helpful for that, you all, okay?
You got to get it off your chest, you know? And you can do that with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/WAD today to get 10% off your first month. That's 10% off your first month at BetterHelp, HELP.com/WAD.
Let's wrap up with some headlines.
Headlines.
President Joe Biden said yesterday that the fate of a potential ceasefire deal in Gaza was in Hamas's hands in the third consecutive day of talks, with no signs of an end to the gridlock. Negotiators for Hamas, as well as mediators from Qatar and Egypt, are in Cairo trying to secure a 40-day ceasefire. But Israel's delegation did not attend. The deal presented to Hamas would free some hostages the militant group captured in the October 7th terrorist attack, and aid to Gaza would be increased in an effort to avert famine. Hamas would also be required to provide a list of all hostages. But in a press conference yesterday, Hamas senior leader Osama Hamdan maintained demands for a permanent ceasefire, a full withdrawal of Israeli troops, and the return of displaced Palestinians, especially in the north. Israel has stated that it wants a pause in the fighting as a means to release hostages from Hamas captivity and insists that it will not end the conflict until Hamas is, quote, eliminated. Hammering out a deal in the next week is a top priority for negotiators, especially because the month-long Islamic holiday of Ramadan begins next Monday. According to Reuters, violence between Israelis and Palestinians often spikes during Ramadan in Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories, even in years without active wars.
And in news out of Arizona, Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs vetoed the GOP-backed Arizona Border Invasion Act on Monday. It's a state Senate bill that would have allowed local police to arrest and detain migrants if they crossed the southern border at any place other than a legal port of entry. In a letter explaining her veto, the governor said, quote, "This bill does not secure our border, will be harmful for communities and businesses in our state, and burdensome for law enforcement personnel and the state judicial system." And that's not all. Because Hobbs was on a roll this week. Also on Monday, she announced the launch of a program to forgive medical debt for up to 1 million Arizonans over the next 2 years. Take a listen to Hobbs at her press conference on Monday.
Hardworking middle-class Arizonans should not be forced to have those difficult kitchen table conversations because of medical debt from conditions they cannot control.
I'm a fan. I love to see this type of news update.
Big time.
This program is targeted to help extremely low-income Arizonans, as well as those who are in deep medical debt. In total, we're talking about wiping out roughly $2 billion of debt, the largest medical debt relief effort by a state ever.
Listen, someone showed up to work this week. It's Katie Hobbs, crushing it.
Yes.
Congratulations to these people in Arizona. Continuing the congratulations for the people in Arizona, staying in the state, the state's independent senator, Kyrsten Sinema, announced yesterday that she will not seek re-election after polling basically made that decision for her. She didn't say what is next, but presumably more time to focus on her true passions, which are advocating on behalf of corporations and hedge funds. Sinema's exit turns the Arizona race into a likely two-way contest between the progressive-leaning Representative Ruben Gallego and MAGA lunatic slash ex-Arizona gubernatorial candidate Carrie Lake.
Yeah, it's pretty much an easy choice there, Arizona voters. And if you're unfamiliar with Ruben Gallego, check out his website immediately. The men's basketball team at Dartmouth voted to unionize yesterday in a first-of-its-kind action for college athletes. The school quickly appealed to the National Labor Relations Board, seeking to reverse the decision that classified Dartmouth players as employees, thereby granting them the right to unionize. If the appeal isn't successful, the college can expect an assist from the NCAA. Back in February, the organization's president hinted to reporters that he was willing to commit to a long fight against the Dartmouth team in its attempt to unionize.
Boo, tomato, tomato.
Truly.
And lastly, trick boots or not, Ron DeSantis was not standing tall on Monday. The Florida governor's prized Stop Woke Act was blocked by a federal appeals court who described it as a, quote, First Amendment sin. Very choice language there. You may have forgotten what the Stop Woke Act is, possibly because DeSantis said woke every 9 seconds on the presidential campaign trail and the word lost all its meaning. So to remind you, the Stop Woke Act barred workplaces, schools, and colleges from holding training events that could make participants feel ashamed about the historical actions of their race or sex. If that sounds bananas to you, it is. Because it really is.
Yes.
It was part of DeSantis' broader attack on diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, and Florida lawmakers approved it in 2022. But a federal judge ruled that it was unconstitutional a few months later as it restricted free speech and expression. Yesterday's ruling affirmed the lower court ruling and means that Florida remains unable to enforce this law. DeSantis officials have signaled that he may appeal to the Supreme Court.
Of course, he's going to keep riding this, but also I just want to emphasize that the impact of this law is already being felt. I think just last Friday, there were reports that University of Florida canceled all DEI-related contracts and fired 28 DEI-related staffers from the university. So the impact is still being felt across the state.
Those are impacts that will continue, that will compound over time, and just, it's really not good. And those are the headlines.
One more thing before we go. Join me and your favorite crooked staffers for the State of the Union group thread tomorrow night. This time around, you can watch along with us on the Pod Save America YouTube channel or our Friends of the Pod Discord, where you'll be able to submit questions for us in the main chat. If this sounds like your kind of watch party, head to crooked.com/friends to learn more and sign up.
That is all for today. If you like the show, make sure you subscribe, leave a review, don't give Kyrsten Sinema a job, and tell your friends to listen.
Yeah, I'm like, which one of her donors has picked up her next contract? And if you're into reading and not just the First Amendment to Ron DeSantis like me, What A Day is also a nightly newsletter. Check it out and subscribe at cricket.com/subscribe. I'm Juanita Tolliver.
I'm Priyanka Arabindi. And send us your Bitcoin.
Actually, can you just transfer it into cash before you send it to me? Because yeah, I'm not messing with one of those little teller machines.
I don't know what to do with that, but I'll take it either way.
I appreciate that. You're open.
Beggars can't be choosers.
What A Day is a production of Crooked Media. It's recorded and mixed by Bill Lance. Our associate producers are Raven Yamamoto and Natalie Bettendorf. We had production help today from John Milstein, Greg Walters, and Julia Clare. Our showrunner is Leo Duran, and our executive producer is Adrian Hill. Our theme music is by Colin Gilliard and Kashaka.
So many teenagers waiting to be adopted from foster care feel like their lives are over. They've given up hope of having a permanent home and are terrified of aging out with no support system. Right now, more than 113,000 children are waiting to be adopted in the U.S. The Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption is dedicated to finding them the right family before it's too late. Learn how you can help at davethomasfoundation.org/learn more.
Set your mind free with a free plan from Fidelity. Start by organizing your plan around what matters most to you. As you go, you'll be able to see your full financial picture, which covers spending, saving, debt, and goals in one simple view. Get started by visiting fidelity.com/freeplan. Expenses charged by your investments and other costs and fees associated with trading or transacting in your account apply. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.